Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, July 24th, 2020. Section A. Politics. Candidates vie for empty district court seat. By Caitlin Randall. CRANDLE at MRT.com. Seven candidates are vying to preside over the 385th District Court in Midland County after speculation Governor Greg Abbott will fill the judicial seat before it's on the ballot in November. The state position has been open since the end of February when Judge Robin Malone Darr retired after 16 years on the bench and nearly two decades with the District Attorney's Office. It can be filled only by the governor's appointment or the election of a new judge in November. If Abbott opts not to tap a replacement, the seat will remain vacant until January. However, County Republican Chair Sherry Merkitt said she has spoken with Abbott's office and believes he intends to proceed with an appointment. She said he likely was delayed in doing so sooner by the coronavirus pandemic, which began shortly after Darr's retirement. Six candidates have applied for the post through the governor's office, as is required to be considered. Those candidates are Mary Baker, Rebecca Patterson, Linehan, James Harwood, Susanna Pruka, Leah Robertson, and Andrew Vanderhoven. A seventh candidate, Keith Stretcher, has also expressed interest and indicated he will apply. Merkitt and the four county precinct chairs will be meeting on Tuesday and listening to each candidate's prepared remarks on their qualifications and desire to run. The chairs will then decide who will represent the Republican Party on the ballot in November. Abbott could bypass their choice and appoint a different candidate until the election, though Merkitt said we usually like to work with the governor. Merkitt said she was excited about the candidates who have submitted applications so far. I think we have some extremely qualified candidates. Two of those in the running recently ran for other county elected official positions. Baker faced off against David Rogers in the July runoff for 142nd district judge, and Linehan challenged County Attorney Russell Malm in March. Abbott could appoint someone for the 385th district seat at any time between now and November. If his choice and the precinct chairs align, that person would likely be running unopposed on the November ballot. If the selections differ, Abbott's appointment would serve until January when a new judge would be sworn in. Education. MCS, Trinity, have plans for in-person and online learning. By Stuart Doreen. S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HurstNP.com. Just like Midland ISD students, youth attending two of the largest private schools in Midland will have options. Midland Christian and Trinity Schools have told the Reporter Telegram they will provide in-class instruction for those who want to come to campus and online learning for those still fearful of the coronavirus pandemic. In May, it appeared there were going to be more certainty heading into the 2021 school year. The Midland Health Department reported 129 total coronavirus cases through the end of May. That was 129 cases over 2.5 months. Then the spike took place. Over the next 7+ weeks, the Health Department reported 1,527 cases. As of Wednesday, that number reached 955 in July alone. Options became necessary. MCS Superintendent Jared Lee told the Reporter Telegram that school is scheduled to start on August 12th. That will hold true for those who come to campus and for those participating online. While there are details to be finalized and passed on to MCS families, Lee said the plan for secondary students is that students learning at home will participate in class through a Zoom call beginning at 8 a.m. Lee said an online learning coordinator has been hired for the elementary school. We are working on policies around online learning so our parents can choose online learning if they want to. Precautions will be in place for those students coming to campus, social distancing whenever possible, lunches for elementary students in the classrooms, and encouraging students to wear masks in areas where it is not possible to practice social distancing. We will approach it where we give parents the option for face coverings. Head of school Shelby Hammer said the plan now is for school to start as planned on August 19th. A final decision is expected on August 7th. There will be students and instructors on campus and remote learning for those who desire that alternative. Like Lee, Hammer said, under normal circumstances, students would be on campus. However, these are not normal. Unprecedented is the term she used to describe the extended spring break and the first attempt at remote learning. Hammer said there will not be the leeway when it comes to the online instruction and school schedule. There will be more structure and accountability when it comes to those learning virtually. Trinity parents are investing in education and have expectations to deliver on the school's mission to be a college preparatory community. Hammer said face coverings will be required for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Hammer also said temperature screenings will be part of the daily protocols. Both Lee and Hammer talked about making sure their respective academic institutions provide the education parents expect. As all schools in Midland, private and public, found out, there are limitations when thrown into the deep end of the virtual learning pool because of the pandemic. The first day of classes for private schools around the city are expected to be from August 12th through August 26th, according to school websites. Construction. Overpass work to help complete north part of Loop 250 by Stuart Doreen. Doreen at HurstMP.com. Work has started on a pair of overpass projects that will help complete the northern half of Loop 250 in Midland. Work is taking place at County Road 1140, County Road 1150, and County Road 60 east of the City of Midland. Overpass work is expected to be done in late 2021 at Loop 250, County Road 1150, and County Road 60. While the overpass at Loop 250 and County Road 1140 should be completed in the summer of 2022, according to previous Texas Department of Transportation reports. TxDOT officials said both projects are on schedule. The projects have been identified as priorities of the Permian Basin Metropolitan Planning Organization and the Midland Development Corp., contributed $5 million for both projects, according to previous Reporter Telegram reports. The contribution is said to have helped leverage state funding in excess of $40 million. Jones Brothers of Odessa won both projects with bids totaling more than $46.7 million. Education. ECISD plans to bring students back in four phases by Caitlin Randall, C-R-A-N-D-L-E at MRT.com. Ector County ISD superintendent presented his back-to-school plan, which involves bringing students back to campus in four phases, beginning August 12th, to the Board of Trustees Tuesday night. Superintendent Scott Murray told board members the plan was created using parameters set by the Texas Education Agency. Those parameters allow students to be phased into in-person learning for the new school year over a period of 4 weeks. The first phase will bring back students who don't have internet access at home, as well as students who receive special services, three-year-olds at early education centers, and children of ECISD employees. The second through fourth phases will begin August 18th, August 24th, and August 28th, respectively. Students will return based on which grade they're in and which school they attend. All students will have the option to either attend school on campus or learn remotely. Most also can choose hybrid classes, alternating between in-person and remote learning, with the exception of kindergarten through second grades. There will be additional rules in place to follow COVID-19 guidelines. Lockers and storage areas will not be available, and students will be provided a personal device, such as a laptop or iPad if needed, and will be responsible for bringing that device to school and home each day. Masks will be required for students in grades 4 through 12 and all employees. Students in pre-kindergarten to third grade will be required to wear masks when outside of the classroom, and it is recommended they wear masks in class. Students who take the bus to school will also be following new rules, Murray said. Only one student will be allowed in each seat unless the students are from the same household. The use of hand sanitizer will be required upon boarding, and all students must wear masks on the bus. Buses will be thoroughly cleaned after each trip. The presentation Tuesday night followed concerns raised by several community members about teachers returning to schools. Two ECISD teachers, Sheena Salcido and Javier Reese, said they did not feel safe returning to school at this time. They asked district leaders to consider waiting until at least September 8th to reopen campuses, or until there has been a strong decline in the community's coronavirus cases for 30 days. In a parent survey that ECISD gathered more than 10,000 results, 67% of parents said they intended to send their children back to campus, while 33% indicated they'd choose remote learning. A survey of about 1,800 ECISD employees found 97% said they would return to work as directed for the 2021 school year. Local briefs from staff reports. Man charged after allegedly hitting woman in the head. A 30-year-old Midland man was being held at Midland County Jail Thursday after allegedly assaulting a woman at a local convenience store on Wednesday, according to a press release from the city spokeswoman. Daryl LaVon Anderson was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony. Bond had not been set as of Thursday afternoon. Police responded to a DK convenience store in the 4200 block of North Midland Drive at about 10 a.m. Wednesday in reference to an assault. A man, later identified as Anderson, hit a woman in the head multiple times using a wooden object and then left the store. The woman was transported to Midland Memorial Hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. Police found the suspect in the 4400 block of North Midland Drive, where he was questioned about the incident. Anderson told officers that he assaulted the woman with a wooden object inside the store. City. Pedestrian dies after being hit by SUV. Midland police are looking for the driver of an SUV that was involved in a pedestrian fatality Thursday morning, according to a press release from the city spokeswoman. Midlander Andrea Romero Pruneda, 68, was walking in the area of Rankin Highway and Woolcott Avenue at about 6 a.m. when she was hit by a Kia Sorento, according to the release. The driver left the scene of the crash without providing any information or checking on the victim. Pruneda was transported to Midland Memorial Hospital, where she died. The investigation revealed that the Sorento is a dark-colored 2011 or 13 model. As a result of Thursday's crash, it has damage to the front passenger side and is missing the lower front passenger side of the bumper from the area of the front tire to the fog light. Anyone with information should call the Midland Police Department at 685-7108 or Midland Crime Stoppers at 694-TIPS. In reference to case number 200723007, Pruneda is the 16th person to die on roads in Midland County this year and the second this month, according to the Reporter-Telegram records. I-20 Wildlife Preserve closes for the week to remove invasive cattail species by J.C. Lewis, jacy.lewis@hurstmp.com. The I-20 Wildlife Preserve will remain closed for the rest of the week due to invasive cattail removal being conducted by volunteers. A study conducted by land manager Nathan Taylor stated concerns about cattails. They included the cattails out competing native vegetation, reducing open water, and overgrowing the boardwalks. Taylor stated concerns about the possibility of cattail detritus buildup that might cause problems to the soil and hydrology of the playa. It's important that volunteers take advantage of the dry weather to use tractors with large mowers attached to cut back the cattails. Board Director Elaine Magruder said the cattails have been an ongoing problem for the preserve. The issue has been that the preserve hasn't been able to find a good way to remove the entire cattail, including the rhizome, which allows the cattail to grow back each year. The preserve staff and volunteers have been busy during the coronavirus pandemic with the planning of a butterfly meadow and the building of an insectarium. The insectarium will have a butterfly enclosure box where the insects can be viewed while in a chrysalis, then released. She said the butterfly meadow, which used to be an illegal dumping site, will be finished in the fall. Volunteers already have planted more than 200 milkweed plants for monarch butterflies during the pandemic. The butterfly meadow will be a more natural-looking space than the butterfly garden already on site. Other features include an outdoor class space with a table and seating. Also, an Eagle Scout has built a blind that is used to watch songbirds. Magruder said that this one has been so popular they are looking to build another songbird blind. The Wildlife Preserve is still working on its master plan that includes a research and nature center, which will be a repository for playa data. City. Number of cases in July tops 1,000. Active cases drop because of number of recoveries. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstMP.com. For the second time this week, the Midland Health Department reported 82 confirmed coronavirus cases in a single day. The 82 cases reported Thursday helped the city reach two new standards during the pandemic. First, the number of cases this week rose to 351. That is already 16 more than the previous high for a week from July 5th to 11th, and there is still one reporting day left in the week. Second, there have been more than 1,000 coronavirus cases reported in Midland County this month. The total in July rose to 1,037. There were slightly fewer than 600 cases reported in June. The total number of cases during the pandemic climbed to 1,738. Nearly 60% of those have happened this month. The number of people who the health department has reported to have recovered jumped from 669 to 808. That means the number of active cases fell from 958 to 899. The city also reported two more Midland County residents have died, raising the number of COVID-19-related deaths to 31. City. Death toll in July increases to 16 inside Midland County. From staff reports. More than half of the coronavirus-related deaths in Midland County occurred in July. The Midland Health Department reported Thursday the deaths of two more residents, bringing the total number of deaths during the pandemic to 31. 16 of those deaths were in this month, according to the Reporter-Telegram records. The 30th patient to die was a woman in her 70s. She died Wednesday. The 31st death, a man in his 60s, died Thursday. They were both being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital. Southwest and American tighten mask rules. Delta widens testing. By David Koenig. Delta Airlines will provide at-home coronavirus tests for some employees, while Southwest and American will tighten their rules on face masks by ending exceptions for medical reasons. We're simply seeing too many exceptions to the mask policy. It has put our flight crews in a really tough spot and also made our customers pretty uncomfortable. Those moves come as airlines try to reassure passengers and their employees about safety during a pandemic that has made many people afraid to fly. Delta said it will expand coronavirus testing at its hub airports and provide at-home tests for employees in Florida and Texas, states that have seen a surge of virus infections and deaths in recent weeks. Reservations agents who don't work at hubs will also get at-home tests. Delta has been testing employees at its Atlanta headquarters at so-called hub airports and expects to have tested all U.S. employees within the next 4 weeks. This week, Delta began requiring passengers who claimed a medical exception to the face mask rule to go through a new screening, a phone call with a staffer at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center. Southwest and American Airlines will go further next week by banning passengers who claim that a medical condition prevents them from wearing a mask. The airline said only children under 2 will be exempt from the requirement. Customers and team members have been clear that they feel more safe when everyone is wearing a face covering. Both airlines said passengers will still be allowed to remove the mask to eat or drink. Southwest said it expects passengers to put their face covering back on as soon as possible.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, July 24, 2020. Midland firefighters check on a house fire Thursday morning at the corner of South Colorado Avenue and Taylor Street. No one was home at the time of the fire. Helping Hands receives third $100,000 matching grant. Helping Hands is about out of funds again, according to Executive Director Mary Harden. A local donor who made the first $100,000 matching grant the nonprofit received during the pandemic has pledged another $100,000, she told the Reporter Telegram on Wednesday. Through the end of June, Helping Hands has spent $850,000 assisting Midlanders with rent, utilities, and medical expenses. This amount is a little less than what the organization typically spends for an entire year, she said. The thrift store has reopened 2 days a week. Hours are 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Wednesday and Saturday. Donations of items for the store or monetary donations may be brought to the facility 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Monday through Saturday. For more information, call 520-8900. Donations may be mailed to Helping Hands, 1301 Brinson Lane, Midland, Texas, 79703. MCPL to host Magic Show at Horseshoe. Midland County Public Library is hosting Harlan Rhodes, Magic by Harlan, 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. Wednesday at the Horseshoe Education Room, located behind the large metal sculpture of a horseshoe. The event is free and open to the public. Masks are required, and the room will be set up to promote social distancing, according to a press release from MCPL. Children participating in the library's summer reading program through readsquared.com will find a special code posted at the event to add to their reading points. Magic by Harlan is made possible by Midland County Public Library Foundation and Midland Friends of Libraries and Literacy. Tall City Brewing closes patio. Tall City Brewing Company closed its patio seating after the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission reversed the decision to allow beer to go to be consumed on patios, according to a Facebook post by the brewery. TABC said on Wednesday businesses could reclassify patios as off-premise and allow beer to be consumed on establishments' patios. Tall City Brewing Company manager Jeff Thomas encouraged Facebook followers to reach out to Governor Greg Abbott about how restrictions such as this are hurting the state's businesses. The brewery had set up a socially distanced and safe patio for beer consumption before it had to close the patio. Tall City Brewing Company is continuing curbside growler pickup from 4 to 8 p.m. Washington Pool is open today. The city's pools, Doug Russell and Washington Family Aquatic Center, are open on alternating days during coronavirus pandemic. Washington is open today for 2 3-hour sessions, noon to 3 p.m. and 4 to 7 p.m. Passes are $3 and go on sale at the pool 30 minutes before opening. Passes are good only for the day of purchase. Today in history. Today's Friday, July 24, the 206th day of 2020. There are 160 days left in the year. Today's highlight. On July 24, 1974, the U.S. Supreme Court unanimously ruled that President Richard Nixon had to turn over subpoenaed White House tape recordings to the Watergate special prosecutor. On this date, in 1911, Yale University history professor Hiram Bingham III found the lost city of the Incas, Machu Picchu, in Peru. In 1937, the state of Alabama dropped charges against 4 of the 9 young black men accused of raping 2 white women in the Scottsboro case. In 1969, the Apollo 11 astronauts, two of whom had been the first men to set foot on the moon, splashed down safely in the Pacific. In 1975, an Apollo spacecraft splashed down in the Pacific, completing a mission which included the first ever docking with a Soyuz capsule from the Soviet Union. 5 years ago, in a stunning public attack on his own party leader, Republican Senator Ted Cruz accused Majority Leader Mitch McConnell of lying, saying he was no better than his Democratic predecessor, Harry Reid, and couldn't be trusted. Today's birthdays. Country singer Pam Tillis is 63. Basketball Hall of Famer Karl Malone is 57. Retired MLB All-Star Barry Bonds is 56. Actress-singer Jennifer Lopez is 51. Basketball player-turned-actor Rick Fox is 51. Country singer Jared Nyman is 41.
The opinion page. America is hitting the self-destruct button. A commentary from Ben Shapiro. On Tuesday, the Wall Street Journal released the results of a poll performed in conjunction with NBC News. The poll found that 56% of Americans believe American society is racist. 71% believe race relations are either very or fairly bad. Most troubling, 65% of black Americans say that racial discrimination is built into American society, including into our policies and institutions. The notion that America is systemically racist bodes ill for the future. It's also a dramatic lie. American history is replete with racism. Racism was indeed the root of systems ranging from slavery to Jim Crow. But the story of America is the story of the cashing of Martin Luther King Jr.'s promissory note, the fulfillment of the pledge of the Declaration of Independence to treat all men equally, to grant them protection of their unalienable natural rights. America has worked to extirpate the nearly universal sin of bigotry in pursuit of the fulfillment of the Declaration. The story of America is 1776, not 1619. It's Abraham Lincoln, not John C. Calhoun. It's Martin Luther King, not Robert DiAngelo. It is particularly true today that American society does not deserve the scorn being heaped upon her head. American society is decidedly not racist. According to Swedish economists from World Values, America is one of the most racially tolerant countries on earth. American law has banned discrimination on race for two generations and more than half a century. In fact, the only racially discriminatory laws on the books cut in favor of racial minorities who have been granted special privileges in arenas like college admissions. The police are no longer instruments of racial terror, contrary to popular media narrative. In many of America's largest cities, police forces are either majority, minority, or nearly so, and police are not more likely to shoot and kill black Americans than white Americans. Problems of high crime in minority neighborhoods are generally a result of under-policing rather than the converse. Some problems of wealth inequality are in part products of history. History always has consequences. But overwhelmingly, the pathways to success are not barred by discriminations. Black Americans occupy many of the most prominent positions in American society, from government to entertainment to education to finance. Responsible individual decision-making is generally rewarded for all Americans, black and white. And Americans are more than willing to fight those who would obstruct the possibility of success for those who make the right decisions. More and more Americans apparently believe that the American system is endemically racist, yet the system produces more wealth, freedom, and opportunity than any on earth for millions of citizens of every color, creed, and religion. If a majority of Americans believe that society is racist, not just individuals, but a vast swath of friends and neighbors, and America's institutions to boot, then it is quite difficult for Americans to unify. No country can survive its citizens seeing one another as enemies rather than friends, seeing their country as a reflection of continuing evil embedded in its history. America, like every other nation, requires a common philosophy, culture, and history to survive. And yet, those elements are being consistently eroded by those who would rather collapse the American system in pursuit of some unspecified utopia. That utopia will not come. And all that will follow in the wake of the dissolution of our common bonds is chaos. The principles of the Declaration of Independence remain true. The promise remains durable. The only question is whether we are willing to stand up for those principles and work anew to fulfill those promises, rather than caving in the foundations of the greatest nation ever conceived by mankind. Obituaries and death notices. Betty June Guthrie passed away on July 21st in Midland at the age of 80. She was born on September 21st, 1939, in Oklahoma City. She spent her junior high school years in Graham, Texas, where she kept friends until her death. She graduated from Wichita Falls High School in 1957. She married James Allen Guthrie in 1959. She is survived by her three children, five grandchildren, eight great-grandchildren. She had numerous other cousins, nieces, and nephews whom she loved. A private grave-sized service will be held at Sunset Memorial Gardens in Odessa. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens Funeral Home. Leon Olson Taylor passed peacefully to join his Lord and Savior on June 25th after a brief bout with pneumonia. Doting husband, caring father, and loving grandfather, Leon was a longtime resident of Fredericksburg, where he was an active member of the First Baptist Church. He was interred at Memorial Oaks in Houston. The family requests that any memorial remembrances be contributed to the Vietnamese Bible, Inc. at Box 61, Midland, Texas, 79702. Ollie W. Jackson of Midland passed away on July 17th at the age of 98 at Memorial Hospital. Ollie is survived by her daughter, LaShonda Jackson, and her two sisters and several grand and great-grandchildren. She was preceded in death by her husband, Oscar Bud Jackson, her son, Steve, and her parents. Visitation will be Friday, July 24th, from 9 to 9 at Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Funeral services will be held on Saturday, July 25th at 10 o'clock at Lighthouse Pentecostal Church. Funeral service is under the direction of Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net. Kenneth Klein, 91, passed away at his home on July 16th in Midland. He was born in La Mesa in 1928 and is survived by seven children. Services are pending.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, July 24th, 2020. Section A. Fundraiser Helps Buy Service Dog by Sam Waller. When Luke Berridge's family decided he needed a service dog, there was no shortage of support from family, friends, and the community. The 14-year-old, who is autistic, raised the money to purchase and train a service dog in just 2 weeks by baking and selling brownies. Luke's father, Permian High School Orchestra Director Todd Berridge, said the project has been a learning experience in itself. He's high-functioning autism, but he has a few things he does every now and again like most autistic kids do, Todd Berridge said of his son. He'll have a few meltdowns and anxieties about going places. My wife, Jessica, who teaches second grade at Bice Elementary, was doing some research and came across a guy named Ricky Bedient training rescue dogs to deal with people with diabetes, people with epilepsy, PTSD, and autism. We looked him up. He came over and said we could get Luke something. Bedian's been looking at rescue dogs and trying to find a match that will work with Luke. Todd Berridge said, having a service dog offers one more level of support and security for his son, who will be in the 8th grade at Wilson and Young Medal of Honor Middle School this fall. Luke can be rough on things and needs a bigger dog, Berridge said. These dogs can absolutely help autistic kids calm down when they have that meltdown. The dogs can sense it and try to help. They can help with the anxiety. The dog can put a paw on his head to calm him down. The dog can even be trained to push a special button if Luke's having any problems, an emergency call if something's happening, and we had to leave for 2 or 3 minutes. Bedient, an Odessan who has been training service dogs for about 10 years, said a service dog can help a person live a more normal life. Some autistic kids are so wrapped up in themselves, and the dogs can redirect them, distract them, or even sit on them where they can't do harm to themselves, Bedient said. The thing with service dogs is about independence. Anybody who lacks independence because of their situation, like somebody with a seizure, I can get a dog that can alert them before they're going to have a seizure so they can get somewhere safe. Or somebody with diabetes, a dog can alert them if their blood sugar is too high or too low so they can check their blood sugar. Bedient said that finding a dog with the right temperament was the biggest factor in the process. A huge part of it is finding the right match, he said. You've got to have a dog that has the desire to work, and you've got to have a dog that wants to focus on what's needed to get things done. Sometimes picking a dog can come down to things like their coat. For some people with PTSD, for instance, brushing a dog can be relaxing, so a dog with longer hair might be the thing. There's a lot of things that go into picking the right dog. Berridge said a service dog for Luke was expected to cost $3,000 to $4,000. You've got to buy the dog, get its shots, stock up on food, collars, he said. You've got to buy a vest for it that says service dog, all the things that go with getting a brand new dog. Then there's the time to train it, which could be a couple of months to maybe a year to finally fully train the dog. Once the decision was made, Luke's fundraising project quickly achieved its goal, his father said. A Facebook page, Luke's Dog Blog, was started to update contributors on its process. Pardon the expression, but it just went viral, Todd Berridge said. People started donating. We had one person who wants to remain anonymous donate $1,800 toward the project. We had donations from friends and family, from strangers we didn't know who happened to see the page on Facebook. Berridge said several purchases were donated to first responders. We had people who didn't want the brownies, but they'd say, send somebody out to Fire Station 5 and donate these to the fire station. We want you to donate these to the police station. We want you to donate all these to the sheriff's office, he said. Throughout the project, which included the entire Berridge family with daughter Natalie, a student at Odessa College, also pitching in, Luke was involved every step of the way, his father said. He helped bake them. He would pour the batter in there, Todd said. He wore a mask the entire time, and he would go along with us to deliver them, every single one. He would always hand them to the people involved and make sure to talk to them. He would write a message on the top of every pan that said, thank you, love, Luke. He has been sending out thank you cards to the ones who mailed in money and didn't want the brownies. He's had a firm hold of what's going on the entire process. And that itself has been a step forward for his son, Berridge said. The thing is, he wants to do it. He doesn't have the social skills to put that forward. When my wife and I would help him, it makes him feel better about it. It makes it more concrete for him. It's making him realize he's got a responsibility in this. Some really nice people out there are helping him out. That puts the money forward, and he'd better treat the dog good. We better get the right one, and he'd better be on top of this. It's helped him socialize even more. He's not nervous about getting out of the car and handing them the brownies. The first couple of ones, he was a little hesitant, but after a few deliveries, he kind of warmed up to people he didn't know and made it that much easier. Berridge said the outpouring of support from the community has been nothing short of phenomenal. We can't thank everybody enough, he said. The Berridge family says thank you for every donation. It's been a blessing. I can't say that word enough, just to have people contact us. We're almost guilty about it. Everything happened so fast, but there are that many people who love Luke and wanted him to do well. Community members by Michael Merlot. Community members joined the president of Odessa College, Dr. Gregory Williams, Thursday morning as part of Odessa College's Coffee and Community Conversation series regarding the economy in West Texas during the pandemic. Williams moderated the conversation, which included Odessa Chamber of Commerce Director of Economic Development, Wesley Burnett, Odessa Mayor David Turner, President of eOfficial Enterprises Incorporated, Sandra Ioff, CEO of Permian Basin Workforce Solutions, Willie Taylor, and owner of Rooster's Diner, Eric Prado. The conversation ranged broadly from federal stimulus checks to unemployment as guest panelists sat with each other and virtual attendees asked questions through Facebook. Turner spoke about the economic downturn, starting with the oil and gas industry. Each one of those rigs is 100 jobs, he said, adding that if people currently out of a job can add to their skill set, it's going to make us a stronger workforce when we come out. There's a light at the end of this tunnel, he said, and it's not a train. Williams asked how people who are unemployed during the downturn can remain hopeful. Burnett said he didn't know the answer to that question, but what keeps him hopeful is that there are resources offered by those who are trying to lend a helping hand, who have a general interest in trying to figure out the current problems. Call us, call the Chamber of Commerce, call Willie at the workforce, and find out what resources there are, Burnett said. There are no self-serving folks at this point other than business owners trying to figure out their own way. But honestly, the hotels, the restaurants, the cities, the community colleges, they just have to say, it doesn't matter at this point. What can I do to help anybody in any situation? And I believe we have that here, he said. Ioff said people in West Texas are used to being adaptable due to oil busts and economic downturns, but said that it was different now because employees getting sick are out of work longer than usual. We're just a community that learns to adapt and just adapt where you need to, she said. She added that she thought that it was hard for businesses to get workers while they were receiving unemployment stimulus checks. Prado also spoke about adaptability as a restaurant owner during the pandemic. We just have to figure out a way to where we can still get business coming in, and if it doesn't work, just throw it out, he said. That's just one of the names of the game in the restaurant business. Taylor talked about June's 13% unemployment rate in Odessa and said that he looks at the current situation differently because Odessa is keeping a civilian workforce population. We are in a transition now, and I look at this as a temporary setback, but we will move forward. Coffee and Community Conversation is a weekly Odessa College panel discussion regarding how current events impact change. Subjects covered in recent weeks have ranged from social and political trends and the role of law enforcement to changes in the educational system to the COVID-19 virus and its impact on our local, state, and national communities, an Odessa College press release detailed. People can watch and participate virtually during the panels at Odessa College's Facebook page. Coronavirus Alters Fundraising by Royal McGregor. Throughout the country, COVID-19 has put a damper on most indoor and outdoor activities. It also holds true for the Permian Basin, as two events, Support More Badges and Bustin' for Badges, which were originally scheduled to take place in March and April, have been rescheduled for August and September. Odessa Police Department spokesperson Corporal Steve Lesser said during a phone interview Wednesday afternoon that Support More Badges will act solely as a raffle ticket sale. Support More Badges is scheduled for 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. August 15th at the Chick-fil-A located in the Wynwood Town Center on 42nd Street. Raffle tickets will be $20 each, or six for $100. There are going to be a couple of OPD and a couple of Ector County Sheriff's Office deputies, and we're going to be selling raffle tickets. But we aren't encouraging families to come, Lesser said. There are a lot of restrictions, but we've been able to work around everything. In previous years, Support More Badges would serve as an opportunity for children and families to interact with local law enforcement agencies. The event would act as the springboard for Bustin' for Badges, which is local law enforcement's annual fundraiser. Bustin' for Badges is scheduled for September 10th and 11th at Windwalker Farms in Stanton. Since it began in 2014, Bustin' for Badges has raised more than $2 million. All of those funds were equally distributed to OPD, Midland Police Department, Ector County Sheriff's Office, and Midland County Sheriff's Office. Lesser said there are plenty of spots open to participate in Bustin' for Badges. The fundraiser's website details there are spots that range from $700 to $7,000 open. Our number one priority is being safe, Lesser said. The last thing we want is people to contract the virus. During a phone interview, Lesser said there are a wealth of guidelines the fundraiser has to follow due to the coronavirus. It includes sanitizing each station after each team completes, wearing masks, and social distancing. The raffle tickets that are going to be sold during Support More Badges will be drawn September 11th. The top prize is a 2020 Polaris Ranger 570, which is valued at $10,499. Second prize is a Diamond VIP package for George Strait concert. And third prize is a Springfield M1A Scout Squad Caliber 308 Winchester. Lesser said a date for the George Strait concert has yet to be determined. He said the prize could be changed, but it will continue to be valued at $3,400. If George Strait cancels his concert, we are going to switch it to a gift card or something else, Lesser said. Quick Hits. Convent Fundraiser. The Martin County Convent Foundation, Incorporated has scheduled its sixth annual Sporting Clay Shoot fundraiser from 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday at Windwalker Farms Sporting Clays, 2551 County Road, C-2801, Stanton. Sponsorships are available. All proceeds go to the restoration and maintenance of the historic convent monastery in Stanton. For more information, call Lester Baker at 432-559-0463, Reggie Baker at 432-553-0693, or visit www.facebook.com/Martin County Convent or www.hcmstanton.org. To register, visit tinyurl.com/yytv6bx2. Food distribution. House of Mercy Ministries, 1466 North U.S. Highway 385 in Andrews, has scheduled a food distribution while supplies last, starting at 8:30 a.m. Saturday. No qualifications required. First come, first served. The event is free and open to the public. Call 432-524-7525. Email houseofmercyandrews@hotmail.com or visit tinyurl.com/y39cuwh9. New teacher welcome tailgate. The Odessa Chamber of Commerce and Chevron will host a welcome tailgate for new ECISD teachers July 31st. Teachers will begin arriving at 9 a.m. This is the 7th annual event, but the first time it will be a tailgate-style welcome due to COVID-19. This event features more than 25 local businesses and organizations such as banks, healthcare, education, city services, and other companies. ECISD is expecting 300-plus new teachers to join their ranks for the upcoming school year, with many of them new to Odessa. This is an opportunity for these new teachers to find out about available services, businesses, and organizations that are available to them, a news release said. It will be an event to celebrate and show appreciation of those teachers joining ECISD. Vendors are being asked to decorate their tailgates and show their welcoming spirit to these new teachers. Free testing in county. Free mobile COVID-19 testing will take place in South and West Ector County Friday and Saturday. Testing will be from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Friday today at 2230 Sycamore Drive at Kellis Turner Park, and from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday at 4454 West Apple, which is the South Ector County Volunteer Fire Department. An Ector County press release detailed. The release also detailed that the tests will be limited to Ector County and Odessa citizens, and that people will be tested regardless of symptoms. People receiving a test are instructed to stay in their vehicle and wear a mask. Local news roundup. Man charged with kidnapping and sexually assaulting ex-common law spouse. An Ector County Sheriff's Office affidavit detailed a 24-year-old man abducted his ex-common law spouse from her job in Andrews, transported her to Odessa, and sexually assaulted her. Todrick Lamar Lopez was charged with sexual assault, a second-degree felony. He was also charged with aggravated kidnapping, a first-degree felony, out of Andrews County. On Monday, ECSO was dispatched to Medical Center Hospital in reference to a sexual assault, the affidavit stated. Deputies were advised by the Andrews Police Department that a kidnapping took place out of Andrews, where the victim was transported to Ector County, where she was sexually assaulted in the 9900 block of Candace Avenue. The victim reportedly told deputies that she was abducted from her place of employment in Andrews by Lopez. She stated she was driven to Odessa against her will and was assaulted in the 9900 block of Candace Avenue. The victim stated, while in the vehicle, Lopez repeatedly punched her in the face and body, which caused her nose to swell and bleed. Lopez also pulled her hair, the affidavit detailed. Once they arrived at the residence in the 9900 block of Candace Avenue, Lopez reportedly sexually assaulted the victim. A warrant was issued for Lopez's arrest on Tuesday. He was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center at 4:01 p.m. Tuesday, jail records show. He has two bonds totaling $35,000 and was still in jail as of Thursday morning. Teenager charged with sexually assaulting 14-year-old girl. A teenager was arrested after he reportedly sexually assaulted a 14-year-old girl. Adrian Daniel Vaez 19, was charged with sexual assault, a second-degree felony. The Ector County Sheriff's Office was notified June 26th that a sexual assault had happened April 11th in the 12,000 block of Louise Avenue, an ECSO affidavit detailed. The victim was reportedly identified as a 14-year-old girl. The girl stated Vaez is a family friend. She told her mother that while she and her mom were visiting Vaez's residence, she and Vaez went riding on an ATV together, and she was sexually assaulted in a field near his residence. The girl detailed the sexual assault on June 30th during a forensic interview, the affidavit stated. On July 16th, during a voluntary video and audio recorded interview, Vaez reportedly admitted he and the girl would kiss. When Vaez was asked if they had ever been sexual in any other way, he stated it was with consent. Vaez was arrested, charged, and booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center Tuesday, jail records show. He had one bond totaling $20,000 and posted bail Wednesday.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.